From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, the 20th installment in our ongoing conversation with Professor Luciana Bone about the history of the USSR from the revolution in 1917 until 1991. Luciana, we missed you last week, and we're glad you're back.
Thank you, Don. Glad to be back.
So we are going to try to wrap up the Spanish Civil War. I think we've given it a good amount of scrutiny. The role of the USSR in that in particular, and the various trends that were trending inside the CPSU at the time. And so let's start there.
Okay. So the question that I have in mind for today to explore is this. Did the Soviet Union advocate a popular front in Spain to preserve capitalism and make the liberal democracies happy, as Trotsky argued, or was it a realistic strategy to fight fascism?
Right.
So, to summarize some of Trotsky's claim that we've mentioned, but I'll just put them all in a bundle. Trotsky said things like, defense of Spanish Republic is defense of capitalism, meaning that the fight against Franco should become a social revolution. That is, a civil war within a civil war. A civil war within the Republican side. We've talked about this. And then he said, the Popular Front curbed social revolution in Spain. He said that social revolution in Spain would have triggered social revolution in Europe and would have crushed Hitler and fascism. He said that Stalin had been Franco's best ally. He said that the Soviet bureaucracy, and this is, he said some contradictory things, that the Soviet bureaucracy, he said, on the one hand, he said, had wanted to extend influence on Spain, but at the same, in other parts, he claimed that the USSR wanted to keep socialism in one country, so which is it?
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting little angle. Stalin discusses socialism in one country as in, well, the world revolution hasn't happened, so we have a choice before us. Do we just become another bourgeois state and wait until the world revolution comes, or do we build socialism in one country? And from that, Trotsky imputes to Stalin the intent to lock socialism up inside the USSR and not let it escape.
Exactly.
It's insane,
exactly.
Really.
And when Stalin said, you know, we have 2/3 of the world. Well, we're one. Remember that figure? We are 1/6 of the world, and we have all these other, the rest of the world against us. Sure. And finally, Trotsky concluded in 1939 that, and I have quoted this already, but it's worth quoting again, that the inspirer of deceit and of the massacre of the revolutionary workers of Spain was Stalin. The defeat of the Spanish Revolution falls as a new indelible blot upon the already bespattered Kremlin gang. This was in 1939.
Yeah.
So,
and we know what's coming. I mean, we know that, looming in the, 1939, we have the non-aggression pact with Germany that was signed by the USSR because it knew German aggression was coming. Hitler was not shy about announcing who the enemy was long before he came to power, even.
Yes, I have.
As soon as they could build and array the weaponry, they deployed them and sent them charging through Poland into the USSR, leaving almost 30 million dead behind. So there was no secret that that was coming, and in 1939 they saw that it was coming, and that's the context that the Kremlin saw things inside. And as it turns out, having defeated Hitler, looking, you know, in retrospect, they were right.
Yeah, they were. So, you know, we could argue that from, in retrospect, but even from that point of view, that you first had to defeat fascism and then think about the revolution, the social revolution, and, right. and that the United Front was a realistic option. And besides, which, you know, Trotsky criticized that that the USSR imposed on the Spanish the Civil War on the Republican side the tasks that were purely democratic and not socialist. And but this wasn't this was not contrary to the interest of the Soviets, which had for the time being a scope of keeping good reports.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also tied to the risk it saw that Spain, a red Spain, would run before the almost inevitable Anglo-American reaction and the doddering of the French connivance.
Right.
Because,
yeah, France was, you know, the Vichy was waiting in the wings at that point in time, right? And Hitler was lining up along the cartoon version of the Maginot Line, and France was about to become, in essence, the western provinces of Germany, and Spain is next. So a red Spain would certainly incite Hitler, and as a matter of fact, Hitler dove into the Spanish Civil War with both feet, right?
Yeah, and so would the the liberal democracies would be upset. Britain, yep. and the United States.
Which was interesting, because they weren't upset enough about the prospect of a fascist Spain
to do
anything about it. They were, you know, watching that from afar. Mm-hmm. But a red Spain, oh my God.
Yeah, they were neutral in the Spanish Civil War while Hitler was crossing the Mediterranean back and forth, supplying right. weapons and the airspace, etc. That was their neutrality.
Well, like Howard Zinn says, of course, you know, there's no standing still on a moving train. Their neutrality yeah. was, in fact, support for fascism.
Yeah. So I just want to quote Stalin's view of Trotskyism in 1939. So he reported to the Central Committee in 1939, and he's very stern. He reminds them that they had ignored the internal subversion. So he says, our party comrades failed to notice, overlooked, that present-day Trotskyism is not what it was, let us say, 7 or 8 years ago. The Trotskyism and the Trotskyists have, during this time, undergone a serious evolution which has radically altered the face of Trotskyism. That in view of this, in the struggle against Trotskyism, the method of struggle likewise must be radically altered. Our party comrades have failed to notice that Trotskyism has ceased to be a political tendency within the working class. Trotskyism has transformed into a frenzied and unprincipled band of wreckers, diversionists, spies, and killers, acting upon the instructions of the intelligence services, service organs of foreign states. This, in the Western propaganda, is an example of Stalin's paranoia, fear of plots, etc. But was he justified?
Well, let's go back to Lenin for a minute, because Lenin had some interesting things to say also. here's one quote. Trotsky's never held yet a firm opinion on any important question of Marxism. He always contrives to worm his way into the cracks of any given difference of opinion and deserts one side for the other. At the present moment, he's in the company of the Bundists and the Liquidators, and these gentlemen do not stand on ceremony where the party's concerned. That's one. He goes with the breeze. Another, he calls him a despicable careerist and a factionalist of the Ryazanov and company type. And in other places, things that are worse. He says in essence that he's a rogue, that he's no good. He's a crook, dishonest, and he's in the pocket of and or in bed with the capitalists. All over the places.
Yeah.
This is Lenin. This is before Stalin.
And Trotsky and the Trotskys call themselves Marxist-Leninists.
Right, that's right. They do. And they'll say that Stalin perverted Lenin and that Trotsky was the true Leninist and Lenin's best pal.
Yeah. I'm going to get to another quote, an interesting quote by Lenin, but in the meantime, I want to say what the Trotskyist view today is on the Spanish Civil War and on the role of the Soviet Union in the Spanish Civil War. He said that the goal, the secret design of Stalin in Spain was not to permit the Republic to be definitively defeated and at the same time not to help it to win. And this...
That's interesting,
because
isn't it?
Stalin was considering the possibility of an alliance with Germany. You tell me how that follows.
Right.
For an example, often is given this particular thing. For example, the Minister of Defense, Prieto, actually proposed to attack the German ships in the waters of the Mediterranean, and this proposal was rejected by Moscow as a provocation.
Right.
Which it would have been.
Of course it would. There was... go ahead. I'm not going to elaborate on... Yes. I'm going to attack you. That's going to provoke a response, period. If you happen to be someone who came to power promising my death, I've just opened the door for you to do that.
Yeah. Come on. Come right in. So I don't know whose actual suggestion was to do this crazy thing. The historian Hugh Thomas actually includes... who did the history of the Spanish Civil War, sort of a classic.
Right.
Thomas says that Prieto proposed that the Republic bomb all the German ships that were crossing the Mediterranean. He realizes that this could provoke a world war. Nevertheless, he says that that the risk is necessary because only in this way will the German aid to Franco end. Now, the representatives of the Comintern in Spain were absolutely stupefied. They consulted Moscow, and Stalin answered that the Soviet government did not desire a world war.
Right. Stalin's whole thing was essentially, look, war is coming, if it comes, but we believe war is coming. We are preparing for it, and the more time we have to prepare for it, the better we shall do. And so if we can avoid war until the very last, it's to our advantage. And that was the game that they played, and that's what won, as it turned out.
Yes, and especially not to provoke this, not to give Hitler
right.
a reason to act before they were ready, as you said. Yes.
Right. I mean, look, if I'm trying to not have a war until I'm ready, and if I'm not ready, why exactly would I attack the other side? I mean,
and why would I take on the burden of being accused of being the aggressor?
Yeah, well, you've got that whole public relations problem to deal with, of course, which matters some. But then you've got the material aspect. Do I have enough planes and tanks yet? Or are they still on the assembly line? Are they still under construction? And those are the questions that Stalin was focused on, and that's the work that was being done in the factories, and there was a war there. You had people, industrial sabotage going on in those factories. You had German agents, and some say other Western agents that were sabotaging the ability to produce weapons for self-defense.
Yes, they had done so from 1934 on.
Yep, and so, in that environment, it's actually, operating, should have to file as a foreign agent to advocate to provoke the enemy before you're ready.
Yes, just madness. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and I also want to quote a 1936 telegram that Stalin sent to Spain. Very terse, very simple. That sort of is a good contrast to the verbosity and the exultation of the other one, Trotsky. He simply wrote, "The workers of the Soviet Union are merely carrying out their duty in giving help within their power to the revolutionary masses of Spain." Calls them revolutionary masses of Spain. They are aware, the workers of the Soviet Union are aware that the liberation of Spain from the yoke of fascist reactionary is not a private affair of the Spanish people, but the common cause of the whole of advanced and progressive mankind. Fraternal greetings, J. Stalin, Pravda, 16 October 1936. Now, this Trotsky reverses completely, that they are aware that liberation of Spain from the yoke of fascism is the affair not only of the Spanish people, but a common cause. No, that was reversed into, this is purely interests of Stalin and the bureaucracy. So that sort of, that terse note gives you the tone of one versus the other, of Stalin versus the rantings, really, of Trotsky.
Right.
Now, what have communist leaders who actually successfully conducted revolution, what opinion do they have of Trotsky?
That's an interesting question. In other words, forgetting for a moment the very important opinion of those sitting in an armchair in bourgeois heaven in one place or another as to what they think should be the path to be followed by people whose lives are so tentative, so in jeopardy, so uncomfortable that they've chosen revolution as a course of action. What do those fine gentlemen think these people should do to remedy their problem, as opposed to people who have actually done it?
Done it, that's right. I mean, you can't really criticize a revolution you have never conducted, can
that's
you?
Right. Well, so, it doesn't seem to stop them, but correct. That would be my understanding of it, yes.
Mm-hmm. So, you already mentioned Lenin. He published a book in two volumes, dedicated to Trotsky's attack against the Bolshevik Party. He had a thing about the Bolshevik Party, Trotsky did. And I want to add, before I quote, that his idea of the people you could call it an idealization of the people. And this, he presumed that there was an instinct in people to be revolutionary without the guidance of a party. It's what I, you know, it's as if he believed socialism is an instinct, whereas, as we know from the Soviet Union and we know from Cuba, socialism is an education. There may be an instinct for justice, that's just general in the human species, but you have to be educated to the thought of socialism, and that's why you need an instruction body, you know. But he was against that. I mean, I remember an incident that Fidel talked about. I don't remember where or when, long time reading, long time ago. He went into the streets after the 1959 revolution and asked people if they wanted housing, affordable housing, free medical care, free education. They all said, oh, yeah. Well, how about socialism? Socialism! Oh, no, not socialism.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, it's funny.
So,
yeah.
That's what I mean by you may have an instinct for justice, for social justice, but that instinct doesn't get developed except by education. You know, you have to have that.
Right. This
you
is
have to
the,
be educated.
This is the ideological question. This is where ideology is in fact important. And
yeah.
You know, people worship it as if it were, you know, a religion almost or something. But what we're talking about is if you are trying to achieve some outcome in the material world, having a scientific approach to obtaining it is absolutely necessary. And that's true even in politics, and perhaps especially in politics, and that is exactly what we're talking about here, is something that you've been trained as an ideology is bad, evil, or whatever. If that happens to be the only material route to obtaining justice, shouldn't that be the thing that's pursued? And this is a, you know, sort of the conundrum that we find ourselves in, because people have been brainwashed to be afraid of socialism. And we're seeing that, however, sort of shaking loose here, if nothing else. You know, the word itself no longer carries the, you know, the ideological weight in opposition, perhaps, that it used to. But it's not like a tick, like in Tourette's or something anymore. And
right.
I remember when Obama was running, and every time somebody called him a socialist, he went up in the polls, even though he had nothing to do with socialism. That was a unique condition post, like, 1949 or something in this country. And certainly, when you saw the idea of class coming front and center back in 2011, certainly, even if not 1999, but with the rise of Occupy Wall Street, where the 1% and the 99% as two distinct and, you know, hostile groups comes front and center to the social, you know, that this is the main contradiction that has to be resolved. That is class consciousness percolating to the top in a place where it had been smothered for 50 years.
That's right.
So
it no longer causes panic, the word,
right,
except among older generation, I think, comfortable, liberal.
Well, some of these libertarians, the young ones, like the out of the millennials, some of the libertarians say some things also that seem, you know, I don't want to get clinical, so I won't say paranoid psychosis, but that seem, you know, like a knee-jerk reaction to something that they apparently don't understand.
Yeah, that's very strange.
Yeah, but outside of that, I think that there's been a sea change on this question. So anyway, we're getting close to. I think we've got about 6 minutes left, so go ahead.
Oh, okay.
And go ahead.
I'll proceed with the quotes of the people who actually conducted revolutions. So, in 1916, that would be a year before Trotsky joined the Bolsheviks. He joined the Bolsheviks in August of 1917 when, you know, the tide turned against the Mensheviks, etc.
Mm.
So in 1916, Lenin wrote, "Trotsky is a manipulator, a liar, and a cynic. In his turbulent political career, he moved from the socialist revolutionaries to the Menshevik, but he has not And to this day, he has not changed. He's a fervent enemy and critic of the Bolshevik Party. He opposes himself in every occasion. This is Trotsky. He has attitudes of the left, but positions of the right.
Right. Yep.
That's 1916. Yep. Why they let him in is beyond my comprehension.
And to really appreciate that, folks should read, for example, What Is to Be Done, that pamphlet that Lenin wrote, where and in other places where Lenin really parses the various parties and forces that were, you know, at play in both the February Revolution in 1917, the opposition to the October Revolution, and then the continuing struggle for at least a short while after that. And the SRs, as they were called, the Socialist Revolutionary Party, was one of the, essentially one of the agents of reaction that was the most, one of the most significant. They, like Trotsky, clothed themselves in hyper-revolutionary garb, and yet the steps that were being advocated were in opposition to the things that clearly needed to be done to get from here to there. And Trotsky rode that horse as long as he could, then the Mensheviks for as long as that could, then he joins the Bolsheviks when they win and starts criticizing everything that they do. From that moment forward until finally he ends up in front of HUAC, by the way. People don't know that. He ends up testifying against the Soviet Union in front of Dees at HUAC in the 1940s.
That's right. Yeah. Now, in Peru, where there hasn't been a revolution, but there has been, movements, anti-colonial, anti-capitalist movement. The founder of the Communist Party in Peru, José Carlos Mariátegui, said something interesting too. He said, Trotskyism feels like a radical theory, but it is unable to condense them in concrete and precise formulae. That is, it has a radical theory, which it has no way of conducting to praxis. To practice.
Right.
Then again, in Catalonia, the Socialist Party gathered four left parties together, unified them. Excluding the Communist Party, which had its own party, and it excluded the Trotskyist. The Trotskyists launched a permanent program of propaganda against the Spanish Communist Party and the Spanish Socialist Party.
Right.
Now, we have to realize that there were 3,000 Trotskyists in the whole Spanish War, and there were 4.5 million members in the Communist Party, 400,000 in the Socialist, and about 50,000 in the Basque Communist Party. So we're looking at 3,000 that were supposed to.
Yeah, we're looking at outliers as opposed to the heart and soul of the Socialist Revolution. And we got to stop here today. Next week we can finish up the Spanish Civil War because we're poised to do that now. And also delve a little more deeply into this whole, Trotskyist phenomenon. So thank you, Professor Bone. I really appreciate the fact that you've been giving us the time to do this. We have a lot more ahead of us, and I hope that people are finding it valuable, and I know I am. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Don. Until next week.
Until next week. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.